It sounded smart when I thought of it.
100% of podcasting. Like, I don't know. It sounded good in my head.
Yes. Say it with confidence.
Hello, and welcome to Snark Squad Pod, a media podcast full of friendship, feelings, and snark. My name is Marines.
I'm Nicole Sweeney.
And today, we're joined by Jessica.
Hello. Yes, I'm Jessica, and I am a frequent contributor to Snark Squad, and you last heard my sultry voice on the Charlie's Angels episode. I have a podcast that I do with some buddies of mine. It's called Macabre Bros, and we discuss horror movies. So if you're into scary movies, you might enjoy our podcast. It's also, we swear a lot, so don't blast it at work. But otherwise, it's great.
And Jessica is here with us today to discuss Birds of Prey and the fantabulous emancipation of one Harley Quinn. Birds of Prey is narrated to us by Harley Quinn, beginning with a cartoon summary of her backstory as Joker's psychiatrist and eventual love interest. This story begins right after she and Joker break up. As Harley tries to dust herself off, she overhears her friends insisting that she is just not meant to stand on her own two feet and generally doubting the sincerity of this breakup. So a drunk and upset Harley blows up Ace Chemical Plant, which was like at the heart of her origin story and her relationship with Joker, which we learned in the cartoon we just saw. So it was a big like public fuck you to her ex-boyfriend. She knew that being Joker's girl bought her some sort of immunity with like the Gotham underbelly, but she quickly discovers that it was a lot more protection than she previously thought. And now that she has very publicly declared that she and the Joker are broken up, half of Gotham is trying to kill her. One of those many people trying to kill her is a nightclub owner and face-peeling gangster Roman Sionis, who has recently found the location of the Bertinelli Diamond, which is embedded with the code to access the Bertinelli fortune. Harley gives us brief backstory that the Bertinellis are a deceased mob family famously murdered a while back in a sort of like gangster coup. Continuing to sort of introduce all the like major players here, Sionis employs Dinah Lance as a nightclub singer, but he spots her beating up some goons to rescue a very drunk Harley immediately after the breakup. So Sionis promotes Dinah to driver, since earlier that night, Harley broke the kneecaps of his previous driver. Meanwhile, at Gotham PD, Detective Renee Montoya is trying to make a case against Sionis, who she believes is responsible for hiring an assassin that they refer to as the Crossbow Killer, who is doing a bunch of like mob murders. Everyone at Gotham PD is like, LOL, the Sionis family is very rich and your case is not good enough. So she doesn't have any sort of backing to pursue this case. Montoya was working the old driver and tries to work Dinah, saying that Dinah's mom used to use her powers to help Gotham PD. And Dinah's like, cool story, but you also all left my mom for dead, so kind of fuck you. Dinah and Sionis' terrifying right-hand man, who is played by Chris Messina, and for some reason of all the famous people in this movie, Chris Messina is the one that I really can't let go of, and like I just couldn't keep track of his name. So Dinah and Chris Messina go to pick up the Bertinelli Diamond and are pickpocketed by a young girl we met earlier in the movie named Cassandra Cain. Cassandra has been picked up kind of repeatedly for pickpocketing, so she's known to Montoya, and we also know that she lives in Dinah's building. So these people all already know who Cassandra is. Cassandra gets picked up by the cops right after she steals the diamond from Chris Messina's pocket. And while she is in the back of the car, she's like stashing all the stuff that she stole around her body. She's a cast. And she sees this diamond that she's newly acquired and decides to swallow it. I worry a little bit about her insides. This diamond is very large and like sharp, but whatever. Sionis is pissed and Chris Messina tells him to blow off some steam by killing Harley, who they have just captured. So there's like a lot of stuff happening all at once, very, very quickly. Harley overheard the stuff about the diamond, and right before she's about to get killed, she's like, okay, wait, give me a chance to find the diamond, and then if I don't, you can kill me. And Sionis is like, what the hell? You've got till midnight. So Harley fabulously attacks the precinct where Cassandra is being held with beanbag guns and paint and glitter. She frees Cassandra, who's about to bail because Harley's getting distracted by, again, there are like more criminals who want to kill her. But Harley rescues Cassandra from another band of bad guys because Sionis put a $500,000 target on Cassandra's head, basically to like give Harley some competition. Cassandra decides that she might as well stick with Harley because everyone else is probably going to cut her open and Harley just wants to buy her some laxatives. Instead of handing Cassandra over, Harley and Cassandra hide out and bond, but are eventually discovered. So Harley finally caves, deciding to hand Cassandra over in exchange for not only Cyanus like not murdering her, but also Cyanus's protection. So she calls Cyanus, makes this deal, and heads to an abandoned theme park to meet up with Cyanus. Dinah Lance is told to go with Christmasina to collect Cassandra, so she ducks into the bathroom real quick to call Montoya. Montoya was recently put on leave for continuing to work this case that everyone said, no, you can't work this case. And she was in the process of getting real fucked up when she got this call from Dinah, but she goes anyway. As Christmasina and Dinah are riding over, so like everybody's kind of converging on this point, he spots a text on Dinah's phone that someone will meet her there. So he ducks out of the car real quick to pee and like calls Cyanus to say, hey, she double-crossed you. So at the abandoned theme park place, Harley tapes Cassandra to the toilet, apologizing, but telling her that if she poops by the time Cyanus arrives, it'll be fine. She is greeted first by a drunk Montoya, and they fight until Harley pushes her out the window. As soon as that happens, the door bursts open again, and Christmasina shoots her with some sort of paralyzing dart. Dinah goes to free Cassandra, but Christmasina tells Dinah to cut her open and reveals that he knows that Dinah double-crossed and that Cyanus is on his way. Harley is getting just enough mobility to pull the dart out, and as she and Dinah are like trying to take out Christmasina, the crossbow killer bursts in, and also Montoya climbs back up through the window, and also Cassandra gets herself free from the toilet and grabs a gun. A whole like altercation ensues here in which Christmasina winds up dead, and eventually everyone realizes that the crossbow killer is actually a little Bertinelli girl who survived the massacre and would like to be called Huntress, thank you very much. This band of unlikely friends is forced to align themselves real quick because Cyanus shows up with an army, and that army is definitely out to kill everyone in that room. Harley, obviously, because that's like the thing the whole movie, Cassandra with the diamond, Dinah, who just crossed him, Montoya, who is the cop trying to make a case against him, and Huntress, who just learned that Cyanus is the one who actually ordered the hit on her family. So she thought that like Christmasina was the last person that she had to kill, but like really Cyanus is. So a big series of funhouse fights commences, building towards a high speed chase with Harley on fucking roller skates and ending on a pier with Cassandra and Harley blowing up Cyanus. In the end, Cassandra finally poops out the diamond. Huntress gets her family fortune back and uses it to fund a crime fighting outfit called the Birds of Prey, consisting of her, Dinah, and Montoya, who just quit her job. Harley and Cassandra sell the actual diamond itself and use that money to start a new life as, I guess, the de facto like crime heads of Gotham now. The end.
Wow.
Nice job.
That's
a lot to cover.
And then also, I guess we'll talk about it later, but it's all told kind of out of order and yes. Then like on top of each other in the movie. So anyway, before we get there and before we ask our actual first question of did you like it, I thought we would give a little bit of our background with the DCEU. Obviously, we covered the entire MCU on this podcast. And then I was like, hey, Nicole, want to do the DCEU? And she was like, no.
No, thank you.
That's why you haven't heard us talk about it yet, or maybe ever. So what is y'all's background with the DCEU?
So I've seen some of the movies, but I don't really have, like, I don't really read comic books, so I don't have, like, a background in comics at all. But I did see Suicide Squad when it came out, unfortunately. And I've seen some Batman movies, various, you know, from starting with back to Michael Keaton and all the way up to, again, unfortunately, Ben Affleck, Batman versus Superman. And I'm all here for Wonder Woman, of course. That's all DCU, right? I'm getting that right. Yeah.
Yes, you are
so,
correct.
Yeah. But for, as far as Harley Quinn, yeah, I know her from Suicide Squad, and that's my main knowledge base.
So I have seen a couple of this like new crop of movies. The only ones that I have seen are ones that I watched specifically for another podcast called Real Bad that's specifically about watching bad movies. So that is part of why I was like, no, I'm not interested. Like I watched, actually, no, I that they're not the only ones. I also saw Wonder Woman, which was good. I just watched it to watch it and I enjoyed that. But we watched Batman v Superman for that podcast. It was bad. We watched Justice League for that podcast. Also, like, genuinely fucking terrible. I am usually one of the last people to complain about sort of like bad CG, but wow. Wow. So that's, yeah, that's like that background. I'm pretty sure I've seen all of the Batman movies going back to like Michael Keaton, but I have not seen Suicide Squad. And my only real association with Harley Quinn is the 90s Batman cartoon, which I did watch the shit out of. So that's that is my background with this character.
For the current crop of movies, which started with Man of Steel, I believe. I watched Man of Steel and Wonder Woman. That's all I've seen literally of this like current run of movies, which is probably why I'm the one that's like, let's watch it. And Nicole's like, you do not know what you ask. Not that Man of Steel was amazing, but it was fine. And Wonder Woman was great. So great. You know, that's all I know. Dating back to that, I'm the same. I've seen all of the Batman movies back to like Michael Keaton until like this new was crap. And obviously I've said a million times on this podcast that Superman is my favorite superhero. So that's pretty much it. I've never seen Harley Quinn in anything, and I actively dislike the Joker as an idea, a character, the discourse around the Joker, like all of that is super ew to me. So that's where I am. But I was like, let's try it. I don't think the Joker's in this one. It's like, it's kind of like tangential to the Joker. So I'm curious, since we've all had like spotty backgrounds, did you end up liking this one?
So like I said, I started off with Suicide Squad, which was a terrible movie. And I mean, I didn't feel like I had high expectations, but maybe I did because their trailer was amazing and the soundtrack sounded cool. I was like, cool. And then I watched the movie and I was like, what was that? I actually watched it twice just to be sure. And no, it's really bad. Coming in, my expectations were crazy low. Although I had sort of heard a general buzz like, this isn't a garbage pile. So I was like, all right. And I liked it. I did. I wasn't quite sure at the very beginning, but then as it went on, I was like, yep, I am into this. This is what I was hoping Suicide Squad would be. This is awesome. So I end up liking it. And the more I think back to it, unless we end up changing my mind through this conversation, which could happen, I'll be open-minded, but I really did like it. I mean, it's not, you know, maybe gonna win a million Oscars, but it was quite enjoyable, I thought.
Yeah, I agree with almost all of that. So I also went in expecting very, very little. Like I didn't see Suicide Squad, but I had seen Justice League and was no longer interested. Also just like anti-hero, like the idea of a movie all about villains, like that just isn't going to be my shit. This is also a movie that's all about villains. So like, you know, I had no real reason to expect much of this, except I had this also had a trailer that was like, that looks like it might be fun, but and I also had heard some like loose buzz that this one was not that bad. Also went in with expectations fully on the floor and was genuinely surprised by how much I liked this. The real reason that I would still kind of put this in the like, this isn't entirely for me camp, isn't even the it's a movie about like a villain sort of character. It's actually more that it's just incredibly violent. And like, that is more the reason that this is like not really my jam. But independent of that, I was genuinely surprised by how much I liked this movie.
This is not my jam because it is a villain movie. The violence was also something that there were a few times that I was like physically like reacting and uncomfortable in my theater chair. Also some of the like mental health rep stuff and like just the idea of I don't know, the background or the origin stories of some of these characters was really not for me. So I think my answer to this question was that this was a really fun, enjoyable movie that was supremely not for me. Mm-hmm. So I've got highs and lows with it. I think that there is going to be a lot to talk about on the positive end of it. But at the end of the day, I don't know. I still walked away going, that was a movie about some really bad people that I'm supposed to like. and, you know, that's not my jam. So here we are. Uh-huh. And chief among them is, of course, Harley Quinn, Margot Robbie starring as Harley Quinn. What did you guys think of her performance? And in general, I think of like Harley Quinn's stamp on this movie, because the visuals, the way that it's told, she's a very big presence. She is narrating the story to us. And even sort of like the way that it jumps around in time ties back to the way that she is telling us the story. So what did you think about all of that?
I thought Margot Robbie did a great job. I think one of her acting skills that she's really good at is playing this kind of like really intense person at the edge of something. She gets that wide-eyed look in her face, and I don't know, it's just kind of perfect for that character, who was also sort of a little always on the edge. So I thought, as far as just casting, it was kind of perfect. I don't know if anyone could have done better. It started, I thought, I was worried I'd be a little annoyed with the direct narrative at the beginning, because I was curious, you know, how they're going to bring in Joker, or kind of bringing him without bringing him in personally. And in the end, I think they made the right choice. But it is a lot of her, like, sort of looking straight to the camera, almost like Jim from The Office, like, kind of at times, where she's talking to you. And I think that is interesting. You could probably go back on second watch. I might see if it's almost positing itself of maybe things didn't happen exactly that way, but that's how she's telling us they happened. That might be reading too deep into this movie. But, yeah, I grew to like it better, and she didn't annoy me as much. In the beginning, I was really a little worried, like, uh-oh, is this going to be annoying? But I think it was okay. And Margot Robbie just like is that character in a way that I thought was really interesting.
I totally agree. I think that Margot Robbie is fantastic as this character. I think that there is something incredibly endearing about the way that she plays this character. This is kind of something that I think that Mari and I talk about a lot when we talk about villains and why people love them so much. And that, like, it's a thing that in order to do the kind of thing that this movie is doing, which is centering a character who's like not a good person, you have to have somebody really charismatic at the heart of it in order to pull that off. And mm-hmm. even then, your mileage may vary. But the thing about this movie, and this is sort of an answer to this question about Harley Quinn, but I think that it will affect the way that I describe everything about the way that I reacted to this movie. But there was something incredibly frenetic about just all of this movie, and mm-hmm. starting with the fact that we opened with this fucking cartoon, and then like all of the sort of freeze frames with the animated backgrounds on people, and the just the color and all of that that is going on throughout all of this, because Harley is the one narrating this, because Harley is the one telling us this story. I was like into that framing almost immediately. Like Jessica did not have that sort of like slow start with it. If anything, the movie won me over like immediately. And the degree to which I had to kind of couch my answer of like, yes, I liked it, but it's not entirely for me, was stuff that was happening as we were going, you know, like throughout the movie, little things would happen that I was like, I get that that's what we're doing here, but also I don't like it. But like the fundamental setup of the movie, which is Harley telling us this story and it being guided by her kind of jumping all over the place, and that very intense frenetic energy that she brings to the story, that like, you know, and it's not just Margot Robbie's portrayal, it's also the script itself, and it's the cinematography, and it's all of it, but it is all meant to represent Harley's point of view. And I think that that was a really good choice. It is my favorite thing about this movie, is like that is that framing this as so incredibly Harley's point of view in that way, and making it very just like chaotic and loud.
I think that part of the reason that I can say this is an enjoyable movie, that maybe, you know, kind of going in was just not for me was because Margot Robbie is so great as Harley Quinn. And I think that even as much as I'm like, I hate the Joker, I hate the whole premise of their relationship and all of this, I think that, like, you know, the foundation of the story is a breakup thing. And that is immediately something that most of the people in the theater can go, yep, you know, like, feel that in there. You know, it's like such a, like, relatable thing. And even when we're watching her, like, cry in her animal pajamas and mm-hmm. chopping off her own hair, you know, like, who hasn't done the sad haircut? Like, all of those things are just so, so, so relatable that you almost, I mean, I don't think you entirely ever forget that Harley's, like, not a good person. This movie never forgets that Harley's not a good person, which mm-hmm. was great. It never tried to be like, look, she's like turning over a new leaf. What it really was saying was like, here's Harley taking back her own story. And so I think that that framing was just so great for that idea of like Harley, the star of her own story. And she got to tell it the way that she wanted to tell it. And it did sort of, it had her signature all over it. Mm-hmm. So I agree that that part of it was like super enjoyable. And I loved watching her perform. And I also like, I always think about like whether or not I buy a character or an actor as a certain character. And I buy Margot Robbie kicking people's asses with a baseball bat. Like mm-hmm. every time she did a little like flip and like broke somebody's leg, as much as I was like cringing, I'm like, yes, she can beat my ass with a baseball bat. Like, like I'm buying this. So yeah, she did a phenomenal job.
I know that you are gonna like take us through the rundown of characters and stuff, but I think that like, since you bring that up, the other thing that I really want to mention that I think is genuinely incredible about this movie is all of the fight choreo is impeccable. All of it was impeccable. And it mm-hmm. was wild to be having this experience of, on the one hand, I am in awe. And then like the next, because again, I also like, there's a certain amount of like physical violence that I wince. I cannot, I can try to like force myself to look at it, but I instinctively like cringe and turn away in my theater seat. And it was a trip of an experience, but when I wasn't cringing, I was absolutely awed by how just like beautiful a lot of the like her breaking people's legs and like flipping around. But it also again had that same sort of energy as a lot of the rest of it. Like it was really, really beautiful, but also in a way that still felt so incredibly tied up in the character who was telling us that story, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It was very stylistic. And I think that's what Suicide Squad was trying for in the beginning, and it failed at, more or less, because I think it didn't have the heart in its characters that this one has, like you're saying, the endearing where you like her. And then I think the beanbag shooting of the police station is kind of the best example of that, because they did this really amazing cool thing where they're like, let's have her shoot up a police station in like the nicest and also coolest way possible. And it worked. It was like glitter bombs and smoke, and she looks like a badass, but like she's not murdering a bunch of people in front of us, you know? So I think they towed that line really well between people who deserved to be beat up and killed and then the rest of it was just kind of the stylistic game that they were playing. But this movie was not kind to the legs. There was much snapping and breaking. That was definitely a bit of a squick factor for me too, but it's small.
I think that the part of the way that Harley fights is almost like a piece of her characterization.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
like you're learning mm-hmm. about who this character is through that choreography. And it was super violent and like super, you know, like I was cringing the whole time, but at the same time, it was almost like, I don't know, like it felt very musical, like it felt like a dance, was very graceful, and it was just weirdly cool to look at. And I think that as I was going through the ups and the downs of this movie, by the time that we got to the funhouse, like, mm-hmm. extended sequence, I was like, this is so freaking cool. Like the entire mm-hmm. thing at the end, the entire sequence when she's on rollerblades, like the whole mm-hmm. thing was just a romp. And I love that ending portion of it, which is probably why I walked out with like a more positive feeling, because the end was just really, really well done.
Well, I feel like everyone kind of gets introduced in a bit of an action scene And they're all a little bit different, and you kind of see who they are through the way they interact with those action scenes, which is pretty cool.
I had a feeling while I was watching this that it was very similar. It's funny because we have Jessica back. It was very similar to Charlie's Angels, where I was like, when we got all of the stuff at the end where it was the angels together, working together, I was like, wait, this is the movie I wanted to see. Like, here's the good stuff. And it just took so long to build to that. And it wasn't necessarily bad building to that, but the gold was at the end when they were finally together, which is how I felt when we got that really great sequence of them working together. And I understood why we had to build there, but I was like, dang it, this is it. This is like, this is the good stuff. And we really got flashes of the other characters, but I cannot wait to see them more. Because I think as wonderful as Margot Robbie was as Harley Quinn, there was the thing that I enjoyed the most was definitely their relationship. And I think that that did much more for like humanizing the gray characters than anything else. So kind of backing up here to the other Birds of Prey, we have, I don't even know if we talk about all of them or just the ones that like stand out to you, but it's Renee Montoya, played by Rosie Perez, the Huntress, who's played by Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Black Canary, played by Journey Smollett Bell. So, yeah, what do you think? Any of those stand out to you?
They were all amazing. I love them. Again, the casting I thought was fantastic. I just was, I don't know, Black Canary got more screen time, so I do feel like connected to her just because they shared more of her story. But Huntress, in her short amount of time on screen, I love her. She is her awkwardness and brusqueness and the whole joke about what her name is and her practicing in the mirror, like, do you remember me? But they didn't make her too silly, but they made her cool, but also, I don't know, so she was fantastic too, so I don't know.
Yeah, they managed to do a lot of characterization work in very little time with that character. Give it, you know, like, I think it helped that they seeded the like Bertinelli massacre situation at like early on. But yeah, they did a ton with that character, both with the incredibly adorable and endearing sequence of her practicing, do you know who I am?
I love that so much.
And just like having us mindful of like what her background is and all of that. Dinah, I think, is really, really interesting because she is like the moral anchor for this movie, maybe. That was me throwing an idea out there, and I'm gonna sit with it as now that I've said it, but I think that she is the most significant character who feels pretty like unambiguously good. Like they try to present her as being like maybe gray because she's the driver for Sionis and whatever, like, but that feels more like circumstance than any sort of, oh, she's a bad person, you know? So and she is kind of the one who we pretty consistently see doing good things, like making good choices. And the worst that can be said about her is that she has, I don't know, enough sense of self-preservation to like not run around and just be doing hero shit. But I enjoyed the presence of that character.
It was so interesting to me because I had seen like some trailers, I guess. I wasn't like super following this movie. So it wasn't really until I was sitting in the theater that I had like moments of like, look at all these actresses, which I know from Really Weird Things. So like Rosie Perez was my dad's favorite actress growing up. I don't know why or where he saw her or if it was just that she's like a Latina. I don't know. He just loved Rosie Perez. So I was like, oh my God, look, it's Rosie Perez. And then Mary Elizabeth Winstead was on Braindead, which me and five other people watched, but was amazing. And I, as soon as I saw her, I was like, oh my God. Like I got so excited about her being there because I had no idea. And then Journey Smollett Bell is from Full House. She played Denise on Full House as a kid actor. So I was just like, look at this amazing collection of women. I was just so excited to see all of them up on the screen. And I do think that they did a lot with each of their characters and for the time being. And it's really interesting that, like, as you said, Dinah was like the moral center, but she also felt like she had her shit together the most out of all of them. You know, like, I, you know, Rosie Perez's character is like a cop and she's trying to do good. But she's like really messy. Yeah. There was something about Dinah that just felt like, you know, even though she didn't have the most glamorous life, she was just like the most together, level-headed. And I think that was a good character to have in the balance of the Birds of Prey.
Mm-hmm. To your point earlier about how like the end of the movie is the best part of the movie and the thing that you wish that the whole movie had been. you see her kind of filling that role too in like the group dynamics. You know, this is the bit where she, you know, she's telling Harley to focus and whatever. Like that's, yes, she is the one who is the most like has her shit together. And that is the role that she falls into pretty quickly in this group, even though like none of them really know each other that well, that's still the like the space that she immediately occupies.
She definitely could have been a villainous character. And you know how Harley Quinn is our most sort of villainous of the group, I'd say. But they really made her, like you said, really good, even though she's working for this boss man, but they explained it in a way that made sense. And then, you know, I could see them doing her character one way or the other. But the fact that she, you know, she's mad at the cops because, you know, she has this history and she, you know, she has to survive. But she definitely could have been, I think, a more villainous character than they made her, but I like that they didn't make her that way.
Speaking of villains, our group of villains have some villains to fight. So
are they villains though? Like, I feel like Harley's really the villain, and then she has these friends. Although I guess Huntress is an assassin.
Yeah, I don't anti-heroes know. Maybe.
Yeah. Anyways, continue.
We do have some like super duper villains in here.
Yeah.
Sionis, who's played by Ewan McGregor, and then Zaz, I think his name was. Mm-hmm. I forgot because Nicole just referred to him as Chris Messina. So that's all I got. What'd you guys think of them and their presence in this movie?
I hate for this to be the like major takeaway from this incredibly female led film. Ewan McGregor was so good in this role. He was so fucking creepy and weird and also funny. Like most of the laughs that this movie got out of me were like that whole bit in his home where he's showing Dinah around. Like he was so good. He was so good.
Mm-hmm. I agree. He was fantastic. He played that really well. Like I think that role could have been played differently and in a way that would have made it not as good if they'd really tried to like super hardcore villain it. But the fact that he was willing to put that humor in and put those little childish touches really made him scarier as a villain to me. And yes. Yeah, just much more interesting to watch. Yeah.
This was a perfect villain for a Harley Quinn movie. Yes. Because it was like he was bad enough to be like, okay, Harley looks good in comparison when you see that.
Yeah.
But also it was like weird enough and like had those moments of humor that I was like, okay, his tone fit with the rest of the movie, which I think was probably a tricky thing to pull off, where you needed somebody bad enough to like, you know, make you uncomfortable and make you worried for, you know, our band of anti-heroes. But that still, like you said, like he got as many laughs from me as anybody else. So that was really great. And I think that adding Chris Messina next to him just upped like his creepy factor and allowed Ewan McGregor to do some of that humor a little more freely.
Their relationship was so good. I thought like creepy because they do appear to have this like pretty good friendship, the two of them, which often you'll see like the mean boss is mean to his henchman who's also mean, like that's not, but the fact that they were like, he would try to talk Ewan down a little bit, although his version of talking him down is like, hey, let's go torture someone, and he's like, right. Oh yeah, that'd be nice, you know. So again,
that is what I need right now.
Yeah. Oh, you're right, it would be nice to horrendously murder someone, thanks buddy, you know. It was just but that added to the whole thing. But he was so creepy. Ugh.
This was probably not what the movie wanted me to be thinking, but every time I was like, who would go to his club? Like, I don't understand why there's anybody in there.
That was terrible. Yeah,
you should all know better by now.
I guess in Gotham there's not a lot of choice.
Okay,
it's
fine.
Probably guaranteed that whatever club you go to is run by a crazy person.
You know, what are you gonna do, not go out? Come on.
Right.
we talked a lot about the choreography and the cinematography and sort of like some of the visuals that they've used, but the other thing that I wanted to add on to there that we haven't touched on yet, and I just wanted to give a shout out to, was the costume design, especially like at the end when they're all like suiting up in their own way to fight. I just thought that was great. And, you know, I think Harley has a very, like, she's very aesthetic, and so was this movie. And so just seeing, kind of going along and seeing, like, what would she wear next? Which the answer to that was, like, one outfit for the majority of the movie. Like, she was wearing the same thing, which was fine. But any time that they had a costume change or, you know, I was just loving it. I thought it was a great piece of the entire visual of the movie.
I also loved all of the clothes. Totally agree. Like, just the aesthetic of Harley Quinn is, I think, even if you don't know that much about this character, like this is an iconic character, and part of why she is iconic is like an aesthetic kind of visual. This reminds me, while we are shouting out the costume department, going back to your point about Dinah being the one who has her shit together, like that's also reflected in the costuming. She's always wearing these cool ass suits, and like even her like casual outfit was like tailored gold pants. And like, so her wardrobe was also girl who has her shit together.
Yeah, her pants were amazing. That is true. I remember looking like, wow, that is fantastic.
There's a suit that she wears that I am particularly obsessed with, that like it's like a brocade sort of situation. And has like a beautiful like lining that, oh, I love it. I want it.
She's wearing like a little gold crop top underneath. Yes. And I was just like, work all of that.
Yeah. Was it Huntress who complimented her on how high she can kick in her tight pants?
Tight pants. I thought that was great. How did you guys feel about this? I mean, I guess we started by saying that our experience with the DCEU is spotty, but I was wondering how you guys felt about this as a superhero movie. Well, it's not a superhero movie because they're not heroes, but you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
In that genre, I kind of like left feeling like I hadn't exactly watched a superhero movie, or you know what I mean? Like it didn't feel that way, but I guess a case could be made for it being more like Deadpool or Guardians of the Galaxy. So how did you feel about it as kind of an entry into this like larger idea of what a superhero movie is?
I think it could work. Again, it's not exactly like Justice League where everyone's like got these crazy powers. Really, only one person has powers. Everyone else is just kick-ass. but I did forget to mention, I did watch Birds of Prey, the TV series, like part of it, went back in 2002. So I did know a little bit about Huntress. And she's kind of got that Batman-esque thing going on, you know, in that show where she's sort of this vigilante for good. So I assumed that this was setting up like this group to do that. So in that case, I think that it kind of works on the same level as Batman, where it's like, yeah, it's a superhero movie, but it's not like X-Men or Marvel where there's just powers all over the place. It's a lot more, or even kind of Daredevil, I guess. So yeah, I would think that works on that level.
I agree with your sense that it didn't feel like a sort of superhero movie. And I think that is ultimately a good thing. Like, I think that part of what made this movie fundamentally enjoyable for me, even though it like checks a lot of boxes for things that I don't tend to like, are that it was trying to do something kind of different and interesting. Like, I think about the experience of watching Thor Ragnarok for the first time, and like all the ways that felt like it was doing something different for, you know, these MCU movies that kind of started to feel a little bit formulaic. And like as the MCU expanded, the ways in which certain movies, and like not all of them, but I think the ones that are the best were the ones that started to like feel more like they belonged to those characters than like they belonged in this larger project. And so I think that, like, going back to everything that we've said about how incredibly stylistic and aesthetic everything about this movie is, I think it just, like, it felt like Harley Quinn's movie first and foremost, more than it felt like anything else. And so I understand the sense of this didn't really feel like a sort of comic book movie in that respect. But at the same time, like, it also did very much feel like a comic book movie, you know, like we literally open with a cartoon, like everything is very colorful. So I don't know. I think I have come around now after babbling to, I don't agree. I think it does actually feel like like fundamentally like a comic book movie, like maybe not a superhero movie, but that's because she's not a superhero, but it still feels like a comic book movie to me.
All right. So is there anything else, anything that we haven't mentioned yet that you guys enjoyed about this movie?
Something that I really wanted to talk about is that for all of the ways in which this movie was too violent for me, the way in which we see violence being taken out on Harley is really, really interesting and also kind of ties back to the like the ways in which this is Harley's movie. And not just Harley's movie, but also just like something broadly more like female gaze about this movie. The moment that particularly stands out to me is the moment where Cyanus hits her when she is captured, like right before she convinces him to let her live. He hits her twice. And the framing of that, we never actually see her get hit. Like we know that it happens, but the shot is, it's him from below, like it's a downward angle. It's him standing over her. And then we cut to her face, like her face having just been hit, like kind of days before we head into that weird little another like very Harley Quinn sequence. And then we repeat that process. And I think that there is just something incredibly interesting about this movie in which there is so much violence. And this character is meant to be a like bad person. She tells us this herself, that like she is not a good person. And there is a ton of violence. But when violence is being done to her by all of these men who she is also like attacking, you know, like it's a situation where most of the men who are attacking her have like valid reason to be doing that. But there is something about the way in which this movie depicts that violence that feels very tied to, again, like this being her movie and probably also the fact that it is directed and written by women. You could feel like women were making the decisions about how all of these fight scenes were playing out, I guess.
I agree. It's like it didn't revel in the fact that she's getting beat up, right? Like it happens, but they don't like zoom in or that's not maybe right, but they don't sort of focus on it in the same way that they do in other films, for sure.
And that specifically feels like a pointed choice from this, you know, female director and female scriptwriter because of like the history of superhero movies and like comic books and how it usually treats violence against women. So, I mean, there are definitely times where Harley is being bested in a fight, but I can more vividly remember other moments of violence in this movie versus like those times when she's bested, if that makes sense. Like I can only remember a handful of times and like the way that it is either pulled away from or a longer shot and not necessarily kind of just kind of like Jessica said, zoomed in on. It felt, I think, more female gazy than male gazy into those moments of like violence against women, which, you know, as I said, in a comic book based movie, in a superhero slash villain movie, that was a choice. And so I don't think that I had noticed at all, Nicole, until you brought that up. And if I go to see this movie again, which I think I might with friends, that is definitely something that I want to pay more attention to.
Yes, I agree that it is also something that I would like to look for more closely. Like I guess the example that I cited is early enough in the movie that I was definitely aware of it from that point forward, because like when that happened, I was like, oh, that's like a really interesting like choice that you just made for this moment. But I agree that in the event that I end up seeing this movie again, which I also think I possibly will, I would also like to be looking for that more kind of specifically and directly.
Do you have any complaints about this movie? Anything that you can identify as like a less good part or something that you would tweak or fix to make this a stronger movie?
Based on the trailers, I did think the same as you, Mari, where I thought that they were going to get together sooner. And I was like, oh, wow, we're like at the end fight and now they're buddies. So if there's a way to that would make sense to get them together sooner, I think that would have been awesome.
Yeah, I think in general, anytime you have a story like this that is functionally an origin story for a group, that is always going to be the big complaint. I think that this is, we have discussed several other examples, the obvious one, you know, Charlie's Angels, like that in general is going to be the thing, like the peak of it is going to be once you finally get all your people together and you start doing that kind of thing. I think this is also something that we are particularly biased in favor of. We've talked a lot about our love of found family stories, and like that is ultimately what they become in the end. Like, this is a group of people who fundamentally like don't really have that much in common and like don't make sense, but they're sort of brought together by these outlandish and ridiculous circumstances, and now they are, you know, they are this found family. So like the thing that it was building towards, that in that final act of the movie, was the thing that I wished that all of it had been. And so, yeah, I think that finding a way to get us to that faster might have been good. But I have mixed feelings about that, because I think that making this more of a found family movie would also mean making this less Harley Quinn's movie. And I don't know that that would have made it better, because like I have said repeatedly, I think the ways in which this was fundamentally her movie was responsible for the things that I loved most about it. So like, eh?
I think that there is an element of like Harley Quinn's character and who she is that it would be difficult to totally get away from this idea of Harley Quinn is crazy. And I guess I just wish that they hadn't gotten to a place where Cyanus was also like kind of portrayed as being some sort of like, you know, some struggling with mental health. Like if he had just been like a rich guy who was evil and was trying to fit in this, I don't know. But there was one point where he was putting on his mask and they were doing some sort of like camera work that made it seem like he was either like dissociating or something weird there. I was like, do we really need this in a movie that already is like so grounded in Harley Quinn is crazy? That part really upset me. And I don't know if it was super personal to me in my viewing experience, but I just didn't think we really need it. He was fine just being the rich, entitled, evil man trying to take over Gotham. We didn't need any more than that.
Yeah, that might have been a part where the superhero part kind of maybe does interfere with the narrative, because I'm sure there's, because his name is like Black Mask or something, so I'm sure there's like a character history that I'm not familiar with. But yeah, we maybe didn't need that, because all he does is put on the mask and then he's like standing on top of the car at the end and shouting out to his army, and I was just thinking, can they hear him through the mask, because the mouth is shut? Then I thought that'd be a great SNL sketch. But basically, like, yeah, the mask came in so late and they didn't do much with it. I guess it was maybe a thing for people who know what he was, but yeah, I don't know if we needed that. Yeah,
I will bring it back around to like a positive thing, but I think that any time that Harley was analyzing people, psychoanalyzing people, and being, you know, just kind of like, you know, armchair or kind of diagnosing them or whatever, or I thought all of those moments were hilarious. Anytime she's like, I have a PhD, I'm like, yeah, girl, you'd be proud of that. That's hard work.
Like her little moment right at the end, like, revenge rarely brings us the, you know, catharsis we actually need. And everyone kind of takes a minute, like, huh, well, let's go kick some ass, you know.
Yeah, I genuinely loved the fact that they, like, leaned so fully into that element of her backstory that, like, yeah, she has this PhD, and to use it like both for those sort of comedic beats, which yes worked and they were great, but we also saw her using it to be better at like her being a villain, like, I don't know, job. It's just really her job per se, but like when she is with Cassandra, and like with Cassandra handcuffed in the minivan or whatever, and you know, Cassandra is lying to her about the diamond, she responds with very like yes, I can read you. Like, I understand all the sort of like body language and whatever, like cues that you are lying to me right now. And I don't know. I just, the implication that also part of her efficacy as a villain is tied to her having this PhD. I enjoyed that as that little touch.
Definitely. I agree. Yeah, it does. You see that she's not dumb. She's just, you know, there's more to it than that. So they could have easily made her dumb and it would have been. And that's what I think Suicide Squad did a little bit, is that like, here is a person, you know, and they didn't go much. But I liked that they also made her, she's smart. You know, that's not her problem. There's other things. So I was curious what you two thought, like, because clearly I'd be surprised if they didn't have her in a movie again. Like, do you think her coming in again, they're going to villainize her more or show these sort of more endearing aspects? I don't know what you guys think. Yeah.
I was kind of upset just for like my own reasons, not at the movie, at the end when she like rode away and was like, time to go, you know, fill in this void. You could take it either way, that she's going to like fill this evil void in Gotham, or maybe she was just going out on her own to, I don't know, what was it that she said that she was going to do? Finder of lost things, mercenary, that kind of, yeah, that kind of work. But I thought it was kind of a bummer. Not that I wanted her to like be holding hands and singing Kumbaya at the end with the rest of the girls, because I thought that probably wouldn't have fit, but to have her going off on her own way was kind of a bummer, because I thought that maybe the implication would be more towards having her join
Me too.
The Birds of Prey. So I'm not sure that I have a guess, but it will be interesting to see where they go from here and whether that feels like a natural progression after this story or kind of like taking her character back a few steps.
I think that also ties heavily in with the complications around making a story about a character who is like functionally a villain in a given universe, that like any sort of character progression is going to have to be undone in order to make them fit into their typical role in the larger universe. I guess I don't really know enough about the character to be able to speak to what kind of like source material opportunities they have to draw from her in the comics and whatever and all that. But like, I can't guess where they're going to take this character, except that my guess is that I will probably be mildly disappointed on a solely personal level.
But I think of her, it's so funny, the person coming to mind is on Firefly, Christina Hendricks' character, or Yosef Bridge.
Yes,
Like, she's kind of evil, and she, every time they run into her, like, doesn't go great for them, but they trust her for a while, and she's very endearing in that way. And so I wonder if they'll do something like that. I hope so, but I don't know. We'll see, I guess.
Very, very maybe like Loki, like they keep bringing him into the plans and he keeps double crossing them. And that's almost more their fault than it is his fault. Like, you know, he's like, dude, this is what I do. You guys keep trusting me. That's on you.
Like, the fifth time, it's going to be fine, guys. Just trust me.
And on that note, that brings us to the end of another episode. Thank you to Jessica for joining us this week, and thank you all for listening. If you are enjoying this podcast, consider sharing it with your friends or rating and reviewing it wherever you are listening. We'd love to hear all of your thoughts on Birds of Prey. There will be a post dedicated to this episode up on snarksquad.com. You can also sign up to join our community on patreon.com/snarksquad. You can also find us on Twitter at snark_squad. You can find me at My Name is Marines.
I am at Sweeney Says.
I am at Antician.
This podcast is produced by the Snark Squad and edited by Nicole. The theme music that is playing us out right now is by Stefan Chin.